Hello, and welcome to the second episode of what is now titled the No Name Movie Podcast. I'm Matthew Marco.
I'm Elizabeth Diddy.
And today we're here for another discussion of movies. Last time we said we didn't have a name, and while we got some suggestions, the fact that we had no name kind of became indicative of what we were doing here. We're just two people talking about movies real casually. We don't really have established personas in a film industry or a film blogging industry even. So we're just going to keep it real casual, no name, generic, but hopefully be special about it.
And I'm going to claim the Amazon gift card because I came up with the name.
Well, you could do that if you want, I guess. I think that's cheating.
Well, I was going to fund it anyway, so I'll just buy myself something special.
I think there's some ethical problem with that, but you go right ahead.
All right.
In this episode, we're going to be talking about some new stuff coming out. There really isn't a whole lot, but I have some things to say. It'll be real bad, but we'll talk about them.
You having some things to say. Surprise, surprise.
And we're going to cover our top movies of 2010. Both the lists of our movies are on our blog. Those links will be in the show notes, but we will go through them again and maybe talk about a few of them. We have interesting and very different lists, but there are a couple things that match, and it's been a pretty good year for film, despite the first half sucking. I don't know if you remember summer of 2010, but it was pretty dire.
There were some high points, and also some low points, so, you know.
Pretty dire. Speaking of pretty dire, it's January, which is film dumping ground time. So a bunch of terrible movies have been coming out. Recently, I saw Green Hornet and Season of the Witch. One of those is a pretty decent movie. And then there's Season of the Witch, which nobody should ever see. I saw it because I'm a masochist and I love Nick Cage. But that doesn't mean that anyone else should pay good money to see that, or even the time investment of renting it when it comes out on DVD. It's just not a good movie.
Which is really too bad. I haven't seen it, but that script actually won a Nickel Fellowship in 2003.
The problem is that when you don't have a budget and you have a director who doesn't know what tone he wants in his movie, and you get a bunch of actors who are obviously only there for the paycheck, it just doesn't work.
Well,
there's no crazy Nick Cage. Ron Perlman might as well be Ron Perlman as he is in any interview or movie he's ever been in. So as a knight in Crusade era, it just does not work. It's not even like fun bad. I was hoping for fun bad. Nick Cage has a lot of fun bad, but this is not fun bad.
So what's the good one?
The good one is Green Hornet. Michel Gondry, who did Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and The Science of Sleep, and that Rewind movie with Jack Black that I can't quite remember the name of.
Be Kind, Rewind?
Yes, that's the one. I haven't seen it. That's why I didn't remember. I like his work. He usually does very whimsical, arrested man-child type movies. And putting that in a superhero film is kind of the worst idea ever. His whimsy mixed with Hollywood expectations of arc and origin and action don't really mesh particularly well. It feels like there's a big schism of identity in the movie. But the comedy is absolutely hilarious. Seth Rogen, who was kind of hit and miss with me, absolutely nails it. It's obvious that he went in, invested in this. He wrote the script. And the beats that he hits are really, really great. It's just a fun action movie. I would put it on the level of Pineapple Express, but because it's not about stoners, it might appeal to more people. I really like Pineapple Express. I know some people have different opinions about that. All right, just awkward pause then. Fine.
Sorry, I haven't seen Green Hornet, so I can't really.
Yeah, but you could have said no, I hate Pineapple Express.
I didn't hate Pineapple Express. I liked Pineapple Express.
That's good. You have taste.
I thought James Franco was hilarious. So
yes,
that was the first time I'd really seen him do just outright comedy, so that was good.
Also of note, Christoph Waltz, who most people know from Inglourious Basterds as the villain, plays the villain in this movie and turns in an equally strange and arresting performance.
And he's going to be the villain in Water for Elephants as well, so
it's got quite a little niche about
there.
That movie.
Well, we'll talk about that more next month, I imagine.
All right.
Let's see, a bit of good news for people looking to see movies. If you're a fan of Natalie Portman, then this is a fantastic time of year for you. You've got your psychological thriller, Natalie Portman in Black Swan, your romantic comedy, Natalie Portman in No Strings Attached, and your marital slash family drama, Natalie Portman in The Other Woman, which is opening in limited release on February 4th.
So you saw No Strings Attached last night, correct?
I did. It opened on January 21st, and my sister and I went out and saw it. And, you know, it's cute. It's not groundbreaking as far as romantic comedies go, but, you know, it was enjoyable. Natalie Portman is adorable, so yeah. If you're in the mood for something light and funny, then it's a good pick. Beyond that, there are a lot of smaller films playing in limited release right now, including marital dramas Blue Valentine and Rabbit Hole, animated feature The Illusionist, 1960s historical feminist drama Made in Dagenham, quirky dramedy Barney's Version, for which Paul Giamatti just won a Golden Globe, and the 2009 Blacklist script Cedar Rapids, which is opening in February.
Also still playing are the big awards hopefuls like King's Speech and The Social Network, both of which we both enjoyed quite a bit, and The Fighter, which neither of us have seen.
Right. Forgot about The Fighter. I always forget about The Fighter for some reason.
Well, we always forget about The Fighter.
Yeah, and Christian Bale did just win the Golden Globe for that as well. So, worth noting, I guess.
And those will continue to be expanding as Oscars are announced tomorrow? Tuesday? One of those.
Yes, the Oscar nominations are set to be announced on January 25th, which is Tuesday, at 5:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
All right, and that brings us to our top movie list of 2010. Quick rundown. Our lists are very personal to us. Everyone has their own list. It's not really the best film sometimes, though I think we'd all argue that our picks are movies that we think are great. They are just the movies that we feel are the best.
Right. I always call them my favorites rather than the best movies of 2010 because, I mean, there are so many different versions of best. So these are our favorites rather than ones we'd maybe consider critical bests, if you will.
And there's certainly some obscure choices, maybe on my list a little too obscure from time to time, but they're movies that I will champion till I'm blue in the face. I love all of them.
Well, that's good, since they're on your favorites list.
You would think.
Yeah. Do you want to do yours first, or what?
You can go ahead.
Okay, thanks. probably the ones that are on everybody's list are Inception, Social Network, Toy Story 3. Most people, I think, have seen those, and with good reason. Inception, obviously, it's kind of a cold film, but, I mean, it's certainly groundbreaking on a variety of levels. Visually, just the complexity of the story going that mainstream was pretty impressive. I also, probably the earliest film in the year was Shutter Island, which was a great little psychological thriller. I say little, it wasn't little, it was actually quite epic in a lot of ways, from Martin Scorsese. So that's one that, if you haven't seen, I would definitely recommend checking that one out.
If you have seen Shutter Island, I would also recommend seeing it again, because the second time, when you know what's going on, it's very much about a build-up to a mystery, and when the reveal going in, it is a different, but still incredibly internally cohesive film. It's an amazing second watch. I enjoyed it way more the second time than I did the first.
All right, and I haven't seen it a second time, so I'm looking forward to doing that myself. The other ones on my list, I actually only did a top 7 because I had 10 other picks that I couldn't narrow down to just 3 to make it an even 10.
You should be ashamed for not having an even 10.
Yeah, Mr. I have an even 12. So those picks were The King's Speech, Black Swan, and Tangled, all of which were really great in very different ways. The King's Speech is, it's an acting tour de force for one thing. You've got Colin Firth and Jeffrey Rush being awesome, as usual. And for me, what was really unexpected was the cinematography of the film. They did some really interesting things with it that you don't usually see in a film like that. A lot of times in historical dramas, there's an emphasis on the lush, on creating these huge sets and making them sort of a spectacle. But what they did with The King's Speech was they kind of made things, the camera angles were sort of off kilter a lot of the time, just to make things slightly uncomfortable, which really spoke to what Bertie, Colin Firth's character, was dealing with, I think. So that was really interesting there. And we've obviously talked at length about Black Swan, so I won't touch too much on that again, but it's an amazing film. And then Tangled is just delightful on a variety of levels, and it's still playing as well. So if you haven't seen it, even if you're not, you know, even if you haven't seen a Disney film in years, I would definitely check this one out. It's great for the family. It's great for a date. It's great if you just want to go and have a good time by yourself. So definitely worth checking out.
All right. My list, there are a couple that overlap. I also had Black Swan on there and 127 Hours, both of which we talked about in the last episode. So I don't really want to go on about them anymore. Tangled, which I agree completely with everything you said. It's a great movie.
That never happens.
My favorite movie, Disney movie in a decade. Just great. Some of the more, let's not say obscure. I have True Grit and The Social Network on there, both of which are pretty big films. I know you're not a big fan of True Grit.
I am one of the only people in the world who did not connect with True Grit, I'm afraid.
I don't think you're one of the only people in the world. It's a minority, but
It's a pretty spare minority there, I think. But, you know, it's funny what hits and what misses sometimes. And for me, that one, I just, for whatever reason, didn't connect with it. But I know a lot of people did. So there you go.
In hopes of keeping this from blowing up too long, I'm going to group together I Am Love and The American, which are both very European, slow-paced, beautifully shot art films. I Am Love has been my personal film champion since I saw it in the summer when it was still in theaters. I absolutely adore it. It is easily my favorite movie of 2010. It is great. It stars Tilda Swinton, speaking Italian and Russian, neither of which she is natively fluent in, and doing a great job of it. It is very classically like 60s, 70s European film, very colorful and vibrant, very much about the beautiful shots and the cities and landscapes and how that reflects emotionally on the characters. It's not a film for people with short attention spans, I'll admit that openly, but it's great. Same with The American. George Clooney in a movie that was horribly missold. I saw the trailer recently after having not seen it, and that is a lying trailer. The trailer is just full of every action shot in the movie, of which there's about 5 minutes in a two-hour film shoved into this trailer. It's a beautiful movie. It's really cold and remote, but feels very intelligent, very understated for Clooney, who usually charms his way through the screen. He's not particularly charming here, but it is very powerful to watch.
Right. He's still captivating, though, in this film. And you have to be in a film like that when there's really not a whole lot going on. I mean, this is sort of a film about him just biding his time, really.
My next movie is Ghost Rider by Roman Polanski, starring Ewan McGregor and Pierce Brosnan. And this is a great, like, low-key, almost Hitchcockian kind of thriller. Ewan McGregor is hired to write the memoirs of Pierce Brosnan, who's playing a Tony Blair-type figure under investigation for possible war crimes. And he gets wrapped up in this weird, maybe, conspiracy. His predecessor had died under mysterious circumstances. It's not exactly, like, a straight thriller because Ian McGregor's character kind of just stumbles through as the most clueless guy in the world trying to piece together what's going on. But it's a great, like, character piece. Pierce Brosnan is better than he almost ever is, and I love the movie.
Yeah, that was a really solid film as well. A lot of these made my top 17, but not my top 7. So, The Ghost Rider was a nice surprise. I don't really connect with a lot of the Polanski films, but this one was really quite good. Like you said, it kind of harkens back to Hitchcock, sort of the Rear Window / Notorious type films, because it's funny, but it's also tense, and yeah, it was a very nice surprise.
Also on my list are I'm Still Here and Exit Through the Gift Shop, which I grouped together because they are kind of two sides of the same coin. They are supposed documentaries about art and identity, and one of them, it seems the coin has fallen that it was all fake, and the other, the coin has fallen that it is all true. I'm not going to spoil Exit Through the Gift Shop because I think that's a treasure that people need to go and see. It's on Instant. Watch it. Just watch it. If you're going to watch any movie on my list, go watch that one, not knowing anything about it. I'm Still Here, on the other hand, I think got a really bad rap when it came out. People were not interested in Joaquin Phoenix's antics as it was portrayed in the media. But the film is, I thought, a really smart taking on of the idea of personality, how are we build up our stars and like to see them fail and delight in watching that disillusion happen. It's a painful movie to watch because if it was true, it would be the worst story in the world. It would just be some friends watching someone fall apart and doing absolutely nothing about it. But that is what we do to the people that we invest all of this time in, following in the news and the gossip sites and magazines and in the media. And I thought that it reflected on the audience that they rejected it so much. No one wants to see their worst voyeuristic tendencies reflected back at them.
I'm not sure that's why it was rejected so much as, I mean, it was kind of, in some ways, cruel to put everybody through that, because I think that, I don't know, I think there were people who were actually worried, but it was never convincing enough at the same time that, I mean, nobody ever really knew what was going on, and so we felt like we were being, you know, just kind of strung along, and I don't know, it was like they wanted us to feel bad for this character, but they weren't, I don't know, they weren't giving us, I don't even know what I'm trying to say exactly, but it just, it, you know, a lot of people compared it to Andy Kaufman, but it was almost, I don't know, it was kind of mean-spirited.
I feel a lot of the problem is that these are people commenting on the media surrounding the movie and not the movie itself. The movie completely bombed, and I don't think most people have seen it who comment on it.
Right, and I actually haven't seen it, but I'm just saying, like, from my perspective, like, I'm interested in it, but knowing that it was fake and knowing that they were trying to string everybody along, I mean, what this does is when people actually do go through these things in real life, it actually makes the problem worse of separating actors and celebrities from real people, because actors and celebrities are real people. And when you pull a stunt like this, you're just creating more of a divide, I think. So, I mean, it was an interesting idea, but I think if they had, instead of trying to fool the entire world into thinking that, you know, Joaquin Phoenix was off his rocker, I don't know, if they'd gone away and done this in secret, I don't know, it could have been different. If so much of it was scripted anyway, then maybe they should have just, you know, done a film version instead of a documentary of sorts.
I'm not going to disagree with you. I'd be interested to see what your opinion was after you had seen it.
Yeah, it's on the list. It's on the list of things to watch. So
the list is very, very long.
I know it, but that one's actually closer to the top than a lot of things. So hopefully I'll get to it soon.
All right, two more movies real quick. The first one is Mother, which is a South Korean film. It is a story about a mother who is unnamed, whose son that she dotes after, who is slightly mentally impaired, is accused of murder, and when he goes to jail, she takes it upon herself to prove his innocence. And it's a really interesting movie. South Korean films are kind of genre bending in that they tackle things that don't go together and pull it off really well. They don't seem to have this conception that genre should be this set of emotions and you can't break out of that box. So sometimes it is funny, sometimes it's absurdist, sometimes it's horrifying, but it's really interesting film to watch as this woman, who is very unassuming at the start, becomes this crusader for justice and descends into this dark place where it's not about proving her son's innocence, but about proving anyone else guilty. I'm not going to spoil where that goes, but it's very Hitchcockian and very complex. And it's a different film than you will see anywhere else in America coming out. We don't make crime dramas like that. My last movie is Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, which was the movie that blew my mind this year. It is a movie that is made for me and people in my generation and interest set. Edgar Wright's take on the Brian O'Malley comic is an amazing kinetic tribute to a bunch of 20-somethings who don't know what they're doing with their lives and have all this baggage and are kind of awkward about it and are unsure of their place in the world, but trying to find out through all the media they take in. It's a weird pop culture mishmash of video games and music and movies and TV all put together in people's lives, how we all live. We all make references to things that we've taken in as children or as teenagers, and that informs who we are. And I think the film is really honest about that. in a way that is hyperkinetic and edited to make your eyeballs melt the first time you've seen it. It's a crazy movie, but I love it. I adore it. I saw it 3 times in theaters and twice since then.
And I saw that one as well after being hounded, and I forget which filmmaker said it, but they were telling people that they were bad people if they didn't go see it in theaters. So I made my way to the theater and I saw it and I enjoyed it. I liked it. I did not love it, mostly because I thought it was a little bit of style over substance. So while I appreciated it and I appreciated what it was trying to do, I did find the character backgrounds and just the heart of the characters a little, I don't think shallow is the right word, but it's the only one I can think of right now. So
I think a lot of that has to do with the adaptation. The book itself, the books themselves, it's 6 volumes compressed into 1 movie. So you're going to have stuff get cut.
Of course.
And so
you had read the comics going into it, right?
I had read all but the last one, which was interesting in reasons outside the scope of this podcast. But yeah, I had known the backstories of all of the characters, and knowing that going in helps a lot. But I feel like the movie carves out its own little niche where you don't really need to know who these people are if you've met these people in your life, because it is very, I know that person. I know the Scott Pilgrim who thinks that he's cool but is really just abusing everyone around him.
That's an interesting take on that character.
Or I know the girl who tries to escape but keeps running into the same situation. I think that it speaks to universal truths in like a post-college or post-high school world, and feels true to that, true to teenager or young adults trying to be out in the world, not people who are set up with houses and families and kids, but the ones who have no clue where they're going in life.
Makes sense. Now, see, I think it's interesting that you connected with that film so much, but you saw Green Book and did not like that film, which is sort of the same thing about people who really have no idea what they're doing with their lives.
My problem with Green Book is that I saw Kicking and Screaming, which was Jim Jarmusch, right?
No, Noah Baumbach.
Noah Baumbach, yes. Sorry. One of his first movies, which is about the same kind of group of people, but college age. And I feel a lot of what his movies are about are people in certain times of their lives. And while I really connected with Kicking and Screaming about these college kids who are suddenly out of college and don't know if their relationships are going to survive and don't really know how to reconnect with adult life, I felt that Green Book was too much about what is going to happen in 10 years when everyone around you has kids and houses, and I don't have any experience with that. I don't live that world yet, so I don't have a way to relate to that. I feel like that movie is one that when I revisit as an older person, I'll connect to then.
So you're calling me old is what you're doing right there. You're calling me old.
I was not going to call you old. Wizened, maybe.
Wizened? That means I'm shriveled.
We're in different environments is all. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
That's true. Everybody around me is married and pregnant. There you go. Let's see. That's the end of your list.
That is
right?
My list.
So the bane of every film lover's existence is when somebody asks, "What's your favorite movie of all time?" I'm not going to be that cruel, but I am going to ask if you had to pick one from your list, and I think you already did, but I'm going to ask again. What would be your favorite film of 2010 if you had to pick?
All right. Before I let you nail me down, let me explain myself. I did not number my list when I put it up on my blog. I don't typically quantify these because that is picking among your children. I have a hard time numbering anything, much less movies that I like the most. I was left with 3, Scott Pilgrim, I Am Love, and Black Swan. And of the 3, I had to go with I Am Love, in part because it is the film that I feel needs the most championing, but also because it is a fantastic movie that is different than anything else you're going to see probably ever.
You know, interestingly, that movie reminded me in some ways of Easy Virtue, which was my favorite movie of 2009. Just some of the themes. I mean, they're completely, completely different movies, but thematically, there are some similarities. And so I also really enjoyed it, even though it didn't make my list. So, and it is a gorgeous movie, certainly.
All right, now you're on the spot.
Okay, I also didn't number my list because it was hard enough trying to find the time to actually put my list together, and obviously I I couldn't even narrow it down to 10 and had to do a top 17, actually. But when it came down to it, it was probably a tie between Black Swan and Tangled. Because Black Swan is probably the movie that affected me the most after I saw it. But in the end, I know that Tangled is the one I'm going to watch over and over and over and over again throughout the course of my life. So well, in the end, I had to pick Tangled as my favorite of 2010.
Black Swan has the problem that all good, serious, dark movies do, in that they are great to experience but not fun to watch when you're putting something in.
Right. Exactly. And I did see it twice, and it was brilliant both times. But I also saw Tangled twice and almost went a third time, and still might make it to the theaters a third time to see it. So I've already pre-ordered it, actually, as well. So, you know, it's definitely going to be one that I watched repeatedly for a very long time. That's my number one pick.
All right, and that brings us to this month's Netflix picks. As usual, we're going to pick a movie each month and talk about it, try to sell it to the audience and to each other if we haven't seen it. They're usually movies that we like, but maybe aren't going to like extremely champion, things that are in the back catalog, things that aren't going to be out in theaters or on our top movies lists.
My Netflix pick for the month is The Station Agent, which is a 2003 film by writer and director Thomas McCarthy, who also wrote and directed 2008's The Visitor. It stars Peter Dinklage as a man who's left an abandoned train station after his only friend dies, and he moves there with the intention of becoming a hermit, but his quirky and sort of broken neighbors make that pretty much impossible. It's a quiet film. There's a lot communicated by expressions or behaviors rather than massive amounts of dialogue. And when you've got, you know, massive acting talents like Mr. Dinklage and co-star Patricia Clarkson, it's really amazing to watch something like that. Thematically, it's a film about how people see one another and how we handle it when others define us by the one thing we wish didn't define us. It seemed like it wasn't necessarily about denying a part of their experience so much as wanting people to see that they're more than a single event or a single condition. The whole thing that, I mean, that's a heavy concept, but it's really handled, I thought, quite brilliantly, because you have these moments that are extremely uncomfortable, but then you also have these times where they're just quiet moments of comfort, and those are really poignant. There's a lot of heartbreak, but a lot of humor in it as well. So it was just really a great movie on all levels. So highly recommended, The Station Agent.
All right, and my pick for this month is the exact tonal opposite of yours, which is Crank. it's a 2006 action thriller directed by Mark Neveldine and Brian Taylor. Starring Jason Statham and Amy Smart. Jason Statham, the movie opens with him waking up. He is a hitman who botched his last job, and a gangster injected him with this synthetic Chinese hormone, which disrupts his adrenaline receptors. So he is about to die because his body is slowing down. And the only way he can keep it up is by being the worst adrenaline junkie in the world. So the entire hour and a half of the movie is him on a rampage of doing dumb things to try to keep his heart rate up, racing cars, crashing in through malls, holding people at gunpoint in hospitals to try to get synthetic adrenaline. It is a crazy movie from the word go. It is nonstop, hilarious action. It's very surreal. It's shot with a hyperkinetic editing style that I would liken to the opening of 127 Hours. Very heavy on jump cuts and close-ups and juxtapositions. It has a fever dream-like quality to it. It is not a serious film. It delights in being ridiculous, and I like my action movies to not be self-serious. It's hilarious. It is the closest thing to a Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner cartoon in live action you will ever, ever see. I adore it. I recommend anyone who has a taste for fun, ridiculous movies watch it. Because it is the best time.
Excellent. All right, I think that's it for this podcast, isn't it?
Yep. Closing up, next month, we are entering award season. So we're going to be talking a little bit about BAFTAs and Oscars. We'll be covering our most anticipated movies of 2011, because guess what? February is the sequel to January, and then nothing good comes out.
You said that, not me.
Good movies do not start until March.
There's a limited release, so, you know, there are things out there to see. It's just there aren't as many good things out there to see.
Most of the limited release are movies from 2010. So if we're going to talk about new things, we need to talk about new things.
I'm just saying it's not completely dire out there.
Uh-huh. Well, I will continue to be the skeptic, and you can be optimistic, and there we go.
That's what we do.
So this has been the second episode of the No Name Movie Podcast. As always, be happy to provide feedback. Let us know how we're doing. We're new to this, obviously. Maybe talk about movies that you liked at the end of 2010, your favorite movies, what you're looking forward to in 2011. If you want to get a hold of us, there is an official email now at nonamemovies@gmail.com. And we actually have a website. We pooled our movie writing resources and created a joint blog at nonamemovieblog@wordpress.com. You can go there, and that's probably where this podcast will be. So if you're listening to it, you've already been there. And you can find movie writing from me and Elizabeth there.
Right on.
You want to plug our Twitters?
Sure. I'm Diddy1013 on Twitter, DITTY1013.
And I am Litrock, LITROCK. Forgive me if I tweet way too much about what I'm watching. That's kind of my thing.
All right.
That'll do it for this month. Hopefully you'll check out the movies we suggested. Go out to theater and see some of the awards bait. Enjoy watching your movies, thinking about them, talking about them.
And let us know what you think.
And let us know what you think, because sharing of opinions is the best part of being a movie fan. Have a good month.
Bye.